Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, in the first half of the show, we have Peter Friedman. The reason we have him on is I woke up this morning, somebody had bought Kurt Cobain's acoustic guitar from the Unplugged MTV iconic series 1993, and they paid $6 million for it, and that's the guy who bought it, Peter. So we'll talk to him. He'll explain something surprising about what he's planning on doing with that guitar. News is coming as well. First, Bet Online. No shortage of action at betonline.ag. Sports are slowly coming back. UFC, NASCAR, boxing, soccer. Bet Online's got the best odds and lines for upcoming games. So it's time to get back into the action here, people. Need more? Bet Online has simulated NFL, NBA, UFC daily. Also, live casino games as well. Poker tournaments, best prop bets in the business. So if you want to have some fun, visit betonline.ag. Use the promo code. And by the way, you can use your mobile device if you'd like and do it that way. Use the promo code podcast1 for your sign-up bonus, your free sign-up bonus. betonline.ag, our exclusive partner here at Podcast One. And don't forget, promo code podcast1 for your sign-up bonus today. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, John McAfee. With Gina Grad on news and Bald Brian on sound effects. And now, the counter to the counterculture that has now become the culture. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on. Mandate, get it on. Thanks for tuning in. And thanks for sharing. We love that about you, right, Gina Grad?
That's right.
Handball, Brian.
Window of negligence.
We're going to talk to Peter Friedman in a second because you may not know who that is. He's a founder of Rode Microphones. And I woke up this morning and I got an email from Mike August that explained that Kurt Cobain's guitar from his Unplugged session from MTV, that you guys all remember, that iconic guitar he was playing upside down like Jimi Hendrix used to do, just sold for $6 million at an auction, and the sweater he was wearing during that went for $334. So and I always kind of periodically talk about the celebrity memorabilia, how, you know, when Jimi Hendrix died, his guitars weren't worth anything, and now they are. But a guitar just sold for $6 million. So I came in, and I said, hey, Max Bat, here's something we can talk about. And he and Dawson ran down the guy who bought it, and he's going to be phoning in a couple of minutes. So we'll talk to him about that. And for those of you who go, $6 million for an acoustic guitar, you're nuts. It's the same people that said that people that bought a Ferrari, let's see, I'm trying to think of a... No, that's Lamborghini, but thanks.
Oh, damn it.
Gina's going to ask me a car question later. So and she set it up, set the table perfectly. Look. A Ferrari GTO, somebody paid $27 million for, you know, 12 years ago, and someone said that's insane, except for that car's $60 million now. Right. So is it insane? And the sweater, Chris looked up the cardigan that Kurt Cobain was wearing. That thing went for, I don't know, $150 or $160 two years earlier?
More than doubled its price after 4 years.
In 4 years, it more than doubled. I don't know. What else can we say that about? So somebody bought that thing for, was it $160, something like that, $155 or whatever it was, sat on it for 4 years, sold it for $340.
And the sweater sold in October, just to be clear. It wasn't over the
Wasn't in the same auction.
Yeah.
Was the thinking with the Jimi Hendrix stuff, like, well, he's dead, he's not going to be able to play it anymore, what does it matter now? Like, what was the thinking that this wouldn't be memorabilia worth keeping?
I don't think memorabilia was memorabilia in 1960, seven or nine or whatever he died. You know what I mean?
But what about generations before that? There were still musicians. There were still artists. There was still their stuff.
There's a couple of things. I think it was considered uncouth to take dead people's junk and like auction it off because this person who's dead played it or whatever. It was a little, it was uncouth. As I learned from walking through the Winchester Mystery Mansion years ago, and none of the furniture was in there. It was all taken to San Francisco and auctioned off. And I said, well, I bet you fetched a premium saying it was from the Winchester Mystery Mansion. And they said, no, that's considered uncouth. They wouldn't have even said it back then. So, yes, we used to have a society that had sort of social rules, you know, the way you dress on an airplane, how you talk to other customers in a Walmart and things like that. We used to follow some sort of social rules. But and also, it just we're too young a nation. There wasn't, I guess, enough celebrities. I don't know how it worked, but none of this stuff was worth anything. And now it is. And I was also thinking back about, I was looking at it, and I was like, oh, the special came out in November of 93. I remember it's that iconic Unplugged, the Unplugged special. And then Cobain died about 5 months later, you know, killed himself about 5 months later. And I always look back at that little window in time, which was just a few months. For me, I was up against turning 30 in May of 94. My dreams, my career, all the things I sort of, my timeline was up. I gave myself until I was 30 to try to do something in the industry. Again, not be a celebrity per se, just do something in the industry, be a writer or director or something.
Get a solid foothold.
Yeah, and I'd gotten to the end of my cutoff date, which was turning 30. I was weeks and months away from just being 30, and I was ready to pack it in and sort of go back and get my contractor's license and, you know, get a bigger pickup truck kind of thing. And so I remember, and of course, you know, Nirvana was at the height of their powers back then. And then in probably March or April of 94, Cobain kills himself. And the reason it's etched into my brain is nobody played more Nirvana songs than K-Rock.
Right.
So when I got to K-Rock, maybe a week after, or maybe the same week or whatever, because I was just starting to train Jimmy for the Bleed and Reseda with my birthday being at the end of May. I just got into K-Rock before the end of May. Cobain had literally just killed himself, and that's all everyone was talking about at K-Rock, you know, that the phones would constantly ring, and it was all Kurt Cobain killed himself 24/7. And it was also weird because I was trying to call in to get someone on the phone when they would say, you know, hey, we have boxing, we need trainers, we need equipment, we need a venue, give us a call in the morning show. But it was all Kurt Cobain killed himself talk, that as I recall. So as I was sitting back, you know, 25, 26 years on, looking at his guitar selling for $6 million and all that has happened in that 26 years and how that marked the very end. Obviously, the end of his career was the exact beginning of my career. So everything is gets pretty poetic when you look at it.
You're both left-handed. Maybe the spirit traveled to you.
Oh, my God.
Time to pick up an axe.
You ever think about that?
That's it. That's right. I know. It's so funny. I was just talking to someone about this when we're doing a lot of, like, you know, you couldn't know my experience, or you couldn't, you couldn't know my experience as a black person, or you couldn't know my experience as a gay person or as a woman. And then there's also that we're somehow unified because of the color of our skin or our sexual proclivities. Right. I reject it all the time. I think it's dangerous and I hate that kind of talk, but I was just saying to someone, once in a while, I'll be signing an autograph, and people go, "Hey, you're left-handed. I'm left-handed too." And I was going, "Yeah, yeah, that's not doesn't mean anything. Please,
Have you noticed I've never brought it up in 5.5 years?
Thanks
for coming. Thanks for coming to book signing.
Yeah. If you told me your favorite comedian, if you said, I really love Mitch Hedberg, and I went, I really love Mitch Hedberg, then we'd have a conversation, because that's not about an arbitrary left-handed or even the color of your skin or gay or straight. That's something.
You got brown eyes, I got brown eyes.
Right. That's something you chose. And I chose that as well. And now we can discuss, or vintage Datsuns if in a pinch. All right. So, yeah.
By the way, the LGBTQ community should use that quote. Because you said, doesn't matter if you're gay. It's not something you chose.
It's not something you chose. Right. When did Cobain... I'm trying to figure this one out. I've always trying to figure this one out, Max Petta. The Bleedin' Reseda was what date, and when did Kurt Cobain die? He died in April.
April 9th? It always sticks out in my mind.
For Bleedin' Reseda or his death?
No, for Cobain. I don't have Bleedin' Reseda etched in my mind.
Cobain died April 5th, 94.
He was April 5th, 94. I don't know if your brain works even and odd, but my brain works even and odd. Was it the 8th? And someone will go, no, the 6th.
Yeah, it's even and odd, and also single digit, double digit. I knew it wasn't double digit. I was like, it's the 9th or the 7th or something. Contrast your... That's like a moment in your life that you remember because of where you were and blah, blah, blah. I remember waking up the morning that he died. I think it was a weekend, a Friday or Saturday, because I remember not having school or something, and they discovered the body, and it was all over MTV News, and it was like, banner, wall to wall, Kurt Cobain. And I remember thinking like, oh man, that sucks. Because I had no connection to Nirvana. I was the nerd in 1994. I was 16 years old. I hadn't turned 16 yet. I was only listening to the Beatles. I say all the time, I'm a huge Beatles fan. I was only listening to and maybe a little bit of like Guns N' Roses, but like it was all Beatles all the time. So in Nirvana, who ironically was super influenced by the Beatles, when the guy died, I was like, oh, yeah, well, I should have gotten into their music.
Couldn't escape Nirvana out here with K-Rock on all the time. So I was, I ended up, I ended up on MTV probably 2.5 years later, actually.
That's right.
Wasn't much after he killed himself that I was all over MTV. All right. So we got Peter Freeman to call
in.
Friedman to call in. And I guess Rode is doing okay if he's got 6 million laying around.
We bought about 1 million other microphones.
And while we're at it, we might as well give him a shout out. We use Rode microphones here the Adam Carolla Show.
Yeah, I like that. And I also like it when guys don't go anonymous. I like it when people buy a baseball or a car or a guitar and they go, yeah, I bought it. Because I think a lot of people feel like, I don't know, they could get robbed or worse, hit up for a loan by a relative, which definitely something scary we have to deal with.
You ever consider collecting anything besides cars? I mean, you're a sports
fire suits,
fan,
helmets.
You like certain music. Besides racing relating things.
There's always been this kind of adage when it comes to car collectors where you go, what car should I get? And then the adage is basically, what car do you like? Because you'll always ultimately don't try to figure out what's going to gain the most in value. Figure out what you like, what you do. You'll probably land on your feet if you do that, or at least you'll be able to enjoy it. You know, for instance, there could be, Dorothy's ruby red slippers or, a gown from Breakfast at Tiffany's or something like that. But I wouldn't enjoy it, and I don't want to research it, and I don't really know. I don't know what it is. I like watches, but I don't know anything about watches. And I like guns, but I don't know anything about guns. I like the mechanics of watches and guns. Someone should combine a gun and a watch. You'd be like, hey, what time is it?
No.
What's that?
Yeah, Boba Fett.
He gets
lost on him.
I get lost. So, but I do have some Newman fire suits and helmets and Tom Cruise stuff and Walter Payton. I have Walter Payton fire. I have his fire suit, not a football or a jersey. The Bleedin' Reseda was April 22nd, And so Kurt Cobain was the fifth, you say, right?
Yeah.
Right. Oh, okay. Right. And the Belita and Reseda. Yeah. So I would have been, so I had about 3 weeks to train Jimmy and or so, and 2 or 3 weeks as I recall. So he would have killed himself right as I was trying to make it in to the station. Crazy. Anyway, time goddamn flies. All right. Or I'll do Method Man, and then we'll get Peter on the phone. Yeah, heard us talking about these guys in previous weeks on this show. They got a fresh approach to grooming, staying clean, fresh, should be fuss-free. Let's talk about deodorant. I actually just hit it today before I came in. People think I have weak hygiene. I do not. I always use the deodorant. You owe it to your coworkers. Aluminum free, by the way, deodorant. 12-hour protection. Nature inspired fragrances like sea surf and
the cedar cypress.
The cedar cypress. So good. That's the deodorant I use.
Yeah, it smells so good. I look forward to taking showers now if I could use that body wash.
The sea surf is the body wash. The cypress is what I think I use in the deodorant department. Anyway, it's fresh cut cedar, hints of cypress. The stuff looks good. It works better. And Just check it out. Believe me, you will be super happy with this product. Save 15% with the code Adam when you buy online at methodmen.com. That's methodmen.com. All right, let's see. Gina,
you're looking for real quick. You're looking for a watch that works as a gun. James Bond had several watches, one containing explosives and detonators, and one that shot it like a Garrett, like a I don't know, a lasso, basically. I'm not sure if he had actually fired like bullets, but he had many watches that did many things, including bombs.
As a kid, the James Bond gadget department, when they went down and talked to Q, I guess, and went into the basement where they were testing all the ejector seats and flame proof capes and everything, it just showed what a horrible childhood I had, because that was the most exciting thing ever. Just sort of dumb cardboard junk in this, you know, they'd be testing the stuff in the background while they were walking through to get to his
flash paper.
His DB5, yeah.
Oh, Chris, in GoldenEye, he had a gun that shot a laser. If you can find that.
Oh, wait, a gun or a watch that shot
a laser? That shot a laser.
There was also a watch that he used. It was Sean Connery in Never Say Never Again. He used a laser from his watch to break out of that prison cell.
Oh, and there was also the laser that was going right at his nutsack.
That's right.
Famously, back then as well. All right. So let's see. Should be calling in any second. Peter, should I move on to another subject, or you want to try to get on? You want to try to get on?
Yeah,
we're
trying to get a hold of him. Yeah, okay. Go ahead and move on.
Gina Grad.
Yeah.
You want a new car?
I need a new car. So my lease is almost up. I have no idea where the time went. You know, I love my good vibes, my puppy kissing booth, my Subaru. But I don't know what to do. So I guess the options are lease, buy a used car, or buy a new car. For some reason, I have zero desire to buy a new car. I'm loving getting like something new every couple of years. And I know that's an expense that you never get rid of. But what do I do? I know I'm well into adulthood and I have no clue. I looked at a site that said best leases of 2020. I don't know what to do.
I
jump in my car.
Yeah.
I've never bought a used car before.
There's so many good cars that are 2 or 3 years old that are still under warranty, and people don't really get it. Like, transmissions are sealed now with synthetic transmission fluid, and they never have to change them. And there's so much better in the maintenance department that you can. So what you can do, like, my whole thing is like, look, do you want to drive a brand new Honda, or do you want to drive a 2-year-old Audi? And by the way, everything works, everything's good, but my take is, why not drive that 2-year-old Audi, which is still under warranty, and why not drive a $53,000, you know, if you say, all right, I have $30,000 to spend on a car. My thing is buy a car that's 2 or 3 years old that was $53,000, see if we can get it for $30,000 versus just pay full freight like for that. A new car. But everything is good. Everything is safe. Everything works. Everything looks pretty sharp, and there's no wrong. You do have to kind of figure out electrical or electric car versus internal combustion. And as I was saying, with my kids just turning 14, 2 years from now, their first car is going to be electric, and that's all they're ever going to know. I mean, yeah. I don't think they're ever going back. You know, we're always kind of trying to do this thing where it's like we're going to regulate or mandate or whatever. But as far as consumers go, trying to sell someone an electric car 6-8 years ago was tough. I mean, no. I had a Nissan Leaf or something I brought over here. I plugged it in. It was 2-3 hours I was here getting 2-3 miles on a plug-in. It's just like the technology wasn't there. 2 years from now, there'll be no reason not to drive an electric car. So,
well, that's really good to know. But stupid question, because I own a car as well. I own a Mazda that I gave to a family member who can no longer use it. Can you just go into any dealership, even if it's not a Mazda, and trade a car in?
Yes.
If they want to buy it.
I had no idea. It was like, well, that means I have to get a Mazda. And my fiance's like, no, you can trade a car in anywhere. I didn't know
that.
Yeah,
you can trade in anywhere. I mean, if they do use cars. And look, right. Not everyone is interested, but I've always been interested. You just reminded me in this sign that you'd see from the freeway with the used car lot, which is they'd go, we pay the most for your used car, and then right under it they'd say rock bottom prices on used cars. And I'm like, one or the other. It's got to be one or the other. You can't simultaneously pay me the most and so the problem with the trade-in is I don't know what the VIG is.
No idea.
But the VIG is like, I'll put it to you this way. If you could get $10,000 trade-in for your Mazda, you could probably sell it on Bring a Trailer or eBay for $13,500. There's a VIG there.
For
it's
sure.
not. It's never worth what you could get. But a lot of people want to drive in, drop it off, and drive away in the new. And so that kind of VIG that you're paying is that convenience thing. Like, do you want to?
Fee.
Yeah, I guess in a way, it's kind of like the price of gas in the rental car. Like, do you want to, if you're going to just drive it back and drop it off, that's fine, but it's $4 a gallon.
Right.
But it's better than stopping at the shittiest. I think there's some sort of deal that they put the scariest gas stations closest to the airport. So you go, fuck it, man. Look at that dude. I don't trust that guy. Just keep driving. I'll pay the, because I've been to every scary gas station by the airport because Mike August doesn't want to pay the extra 22 cents a gallon. All right. Yes.
I'll give you one quick piece of breaking news that just came across my news alerts. It says eclectic director Joel Schumacher, whose career ranged from Batman to St. Elmo's Fire, dies at age 80. Yeah.
Wow. Did not know. You know, it's weird. You know, it's a bad time with the pandemic and Me Too and all the shit that's going on. Where when I hear about a person dying now, I'm like, lateral move. I mean, at least you didn't get Me Too'd. Like, you hear this celebrity name and you go, oh, my God, this guy's getting Me Too'd. Or there's some footage of him in blackface from 1971. And it's like, oh, he died. Oh, good
oh,
for
God,
him.
He just died. Woo.
Bullet dodged. Good for him.
He's the lucky one. The lucky ones died first.
I do. I think about, you know, I was just thinking about my friend Jeff Katz, who I told you passed earlier in the year. And it's like, hey, he missed this whole thing. He missed the rioting and he missed getting Me Too'd and Black Lives Matter. He missed the taking to the streets and the cops and all the chaos and the COVID-19. Like, he just missed that. Let's be honest. There's probably, you know, there are better times to be alive, and people do this all the time. Like, who would want to live? Would you have want to live, you know, when you stepped on a rusty piece of bronze, got tetanus, and now died, you know, on your 22nd birthday? Like, no one would want to live. We live in a time, you know, so it's kind of like we can all agree they're good times to be alive. It's like you're talking about LGBT. Like there was a time where, hey, if you were gay, you were put to death or whatever. Yeah. It's a good time for that. But to be fair, they're probably good times to die, too. I should write a children's book. But I mean, hey, if you punched out in, you know, January, February of this year, look, I'm not saying that there's a good time, but you picked a, you know, picked a pretty good time to punch out. You missed a lot.
Probably. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen every Joel Schumacher movie. It's a blind spot for me, but the ones I've seen, Phone Booth, fantastic movie, streaming on Hulu.
Oh, yeah.
And, what's the one? Falling Down with Michael Douglas, really good, streaming on
Often
Vudu.
Often referenced.
Hulu and Vudu for those.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. We have no word from Peter.
No, I know he's traveling from L.A. to San Francisco right now, so I don't know if there's something going on with that. But
oh, okay. All right.
We're just waiting.
Let me, be a nice move? Like, you know when they, you know when somebody, like, buys the baseball that Mark McGwire hits and then shreds it or something like that because he's a Cubs fan or, you know, that move that,
it
that
blows kinda up the ball. Yeah.
He should take that $6 million guitar and go full El Cabong. Also, John Belushi in the stairwell of Animal House.
Just go full honky tonk man.
Yeah, just full honky tonk man, El Cabong, who was a character that probably, there's a lot of cultural appropriation going on with El Cabong. But in the cartoons I used to watch when I was a kid, Quick Draw McGraw, I think, had like an alter ego or something named like El Cabong, and he'd hit everyone over the head with a guitar or the honky tonk man. Yeah. That'd be a power move. Well, let's pitch that to Peter when he's when we get him on the phone. His team said he'll call in a second. All right, let me hit Brandon, 37, Tucson, Arizona. What's going on?
Hey, Adam, Gina Bald, how are you guys?
Good.
Hey. What's happening?
What's going on?
Great. Pleasure to talk to you guys. Adam, I've read and listened to just about everything, so I really appreciate everything over the years.
Well, thanks. Have you got I'm Your Emotional Support Animal yet?
Yeah, I already listened to the audio book. I love the side commentary. Commentary. Dawson chiming in, all of it. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, it's fun. Dawson was on the mic as well, which made it fun because I was just talking to him through the window. So, yeah, guys, go get that and get the book. I know Amazon is sold out, but they won't take – you can still go buy the book, and they won't cash your check until it comes back in, which should be any day now. And give it a review because I read them. Thank you. Infinite audiobooks as well, so says Max Pata. Go ahead, Brandon.
All right. So I was actually, whenever the tweet to call in came across, I was sitting here jotting down some notes for a team meeting that I have tonight. I have 8 young-ish employees all in their 20s, and Arizona just went to the full mask thing like California has been. And so we have a team meeting tonight. It'll be brought up and addressed. Everything is full mask now. And it's kind of been, like you've said before, catch-as-catch-can all along with all of it, as well as with my employees. And I don't know where they get their information or how they, you know, how they decide when to wear the mask or when not to and all this stuff. But I always think of you talking about being calibrated. Now, again, these employees are all 20-something years old and probably don't have a whole lot of life experience to be calibrated. So how do you, you know, and again, just tonight, I'm just bringing up the mask thing. But as an aside, I would like to, you know, give them a little something like from the Ace Man. Here's how he would recommend to get calibrated. So, you know, whether or not to actually be scared or worried or wear the mask or whatever it is.
Well, I would pitch it. I was just talking to Dr. Drew about how ineffective it is. Is it ineffective?
Or ineffective.
Ineffective. Mm-hmm. How ineffective it is to just sort of push your ideas right at people. They just fight it, you know. But the way to
do it. Yeah, I hear you. And just, sorry, real quickly. I spent 15 years in construction like you did, where you were spoken to and know in certain terms.
Yeah.
So this new venture now where I have these young kids under me has been a challenge
They're
to
all the
communicate
worst.
To
the
them
worst.
In a way,
yeah.
You know.
All right. So here's the thing. Here's the way I would push it out there, which is people look at, you know, better safe than sorry. And that's the adage. And people look at it as, you know, 100% safety is good if the shit goes down, but they don't look at the downside of living your life that way in totality. It's funny. I was telling you, I had a heart to heart with my dad. I told you the other day. And one of the things we discussed was my cousin Vince, who was my dad's closest friend from the old neighborhood in the south side of Philadelphia, was Vince Bruno. And Vince was a gregarious kind of he was an outgoing guy. And he said, you know, when I would walk to school, I would literally hide behind cars as I sort of scurried to school because there were gangs and there were tough neighborhoods and they would get beat up and so on and so forth. And Vince just walked. He just walked straight up and down. And then later on, Vince would, he got to know his grandkids by like taking his grandkids to Europe, you know, and they'd hike all over the place and they'd see everything. And so here was my dad at the end. He's telling me this because he's at the end of his life, you know, and he's starting to be more vulnerable and kind of open up. And he's saying, I envied Vince because Vince wasn't scared. I was scared all the time. I didn't want to do. My dad led a life of fear. And now he's reflecting on his life. And there's not that much to reflect on because of the fear. He was driven by fear. And his best friend, who grew up in the same neighborhood, didn't live his life based on fear and would just go out. He wasn't a daredevil. He would just go out and do things. And the fear. So if you think about anyone historically or Vince Bruno, you know, names you know, names you don't know, there's no example of a fear-based life that you look up to. There just isn't. So how about the very real fear of living a fear-based life? What about all the consequences that go along with that? I mean, there's bumps and bruises that go along with a life if you want to go out in the desert and ride 250 Honda motorcycles and you can fall off one, or you want to ride a horse and jump over a fence. I mean, there's always, or you do a lot of traveling and, you know, a lot of puddle jumpers or, you know, seaplanes or whatever. I mean, there's a danger that is inherent in that life. But when they both got to the end of their life, meaning my dad and Vince, Vince was able to reflect on all these experiences. And my dad is sitting there telling me that he wished he wasn't fear-based. He wished he would have done those things. He wished he would have had those experiences. So, you know, this notion of all upside to safety and no downside. Oh, there's a big downside. There's a colossal downside. There's a downside that nobody, you know, everyone talks about fear like in the moment, you know, like, do you want to get in that race car? Do you want to jump on that horse? Do you want to jump in that plane and go here? And it's like, there's a financial fear. There's kind of a spiritual fear. There's a danger, you know, your own safety fear. Yeah. All those in the moment. You can say in the moment, no, I don't want to get on that motorcycle, or no, I'm not going to climb on top of that camel and gallop through the desert. No, I'm not going to get in that race car. That's all good in the moment. Stand back like a mosaic. You don't see it when you're up against it. You're up against the little tiles of the mosaic and you go, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to venture. I'm not going to buy a Kurt Cobain's guitar for $6 million. I'm not going to race Paul Newman's old race car. That's fine when you're staring at the tile. Step back. See the picture. That's your life. And you see a coward. You see a mosaic of a coward that you can't see when your face is up against it. My dad is now 90 and he stepped back into the museum of his life and he's seeing a very clear picture of a coward. And he couldn't see it when he was up against it. You can't see it. You just see the different color tiles and you go, no, it doesn't sound safe. I'm not going to do it. Well, eventually a life of playing it safe gets you into what? It's a mosaic of a coward, and it's not a life well lived. Yes.
Most people never see it. You know, they never see the mosaic. And if they do, they're like your dad is 90 years old. And what are you going to do?
Right. Right. There's nothing to do. There's nothing to do now.
At this point, the ship has sailed.
Right. And that's what he was relating to me.
Sounds like a Johnny Cash song, Mosaic of a Coward.
No, it's a metaphor, which is, of course, when you're up close, it's real easy to make all those super safe decisions. Like, I'm not doing this, or I'm going to protect that. But keep doing that throughout your life and see what that mosaic, see the shape that takes. All right, Peter Friedman is on line four. Should we take a Peter?
Yo.
Hey, man. Thank you for calling in.
My pleasure. My pleasure. I'm listening to you there. I'm thinking, am I a coward or a fool or a brave man? Or what am I doing here? Huh?
Oh, listen, I bought Paul Newman's race car for $5 million at an auction. So
did you give it away?
What's that?
Did you give it away?
Hell no, I'm driving it.
Nah, dude, that's not the way to go. I'm giving this away.
Are
I'm
you?
Giving every iron away.
Are you going to give that $6 million guitar away?
You know it, brother.
How's
but not before I've done some good.
How does that?
I didn't buy it for me. I bought it to highlight the crisis worldwide for musicians, entertainers, people on both sides of the camera and microphone, because that supported me for my whole life and my family. So now I've got a bit of coin. I'm going to do something for them.
Well, what are you going to do? That's great.
Ah,
yeah.
Good question. So, you know, there's a lot of talk and there's letters and there's this, that, but I've got friends all over the world who are literally sleeping on each other's floors. They can't have food. They've got kids. There's no medical. There's no wage support. There's no mental health support. There's nothing because we don't consider them as workers. But then we all want to go to a gig, and that's got to stop. So, yes, and the amount of tension I've got, it's awesome. I've got probably 1 billion people have seen it or more. Every bit of press worldwide, they're all asking me, what are you doing this for? I got a vehicle to actually say, right, we need to change it. I've even got government people saying they want to help, but what should we do? Now I've got a voice. I've got to move quickly, but we've got a voice. So I'm going to tour it around the world. All the proceeds are going to go to this foundation I'm doing, which is a lobbying foundation, and then I'm going to sell the guitar as well. And there's lots of other fundraising things I'm going to do with it. But, yeah, I don't need it hanging on my wall.
Wow, you're so much better than I am.
Yeah, I'm not a numbnut. Well, actually, no, my girl thinks I'm a numbnut. But anyway,
well, first off,
although you know what, check out the photo. What a fool! I'm holding it upside down.
I was going to say,
I can't play. You see, yeah,
right, which is right side up.
Yeah, man.
How do you get? We use Rode microphones, so yes, thanks to that, and so to all the good shows, I guess, and musicians and everything else. How does that company work? How did you start Rode, or did you?
Yeah, I did, yeah. I started out, I don't own any money. It's a nice spot to be in. But it feels like it wasn't that long ago. I'm 62 this year, and that's 30 years of slog. And I was in L.A. in the 90s when all the Nirvana stuff was going down, and that's when I was melting. I was super fat because I eat when I'm depressed, and I was drinking and eating shitty pizza and walking the streets trying to sell my mic, or one mic. That's how low I was because I'd lost my house, lost everything. I had little kids. But, man, magic happened. And I ended up being reasonably wealthy, more than I'll ever need. And so, yeah, I'm thinking about what to do with it. I'm not giving it to the kids. There's no Lucky Sperm Club needed for them. They're happy. I'm happy. And let's do something.
What did they estimate the guitar would go for? I mean, I've been to a lot of car auctions. They usually have an estimate.
Yeah, I instead of talking about, instead of start, I put a bid in at $1 million. They, earlier on, because I found out about a couple of months ago, and I thought I'd got a 1.5, 2, something like that. And then it blitzed past what I thought was my highest thing in seconds. And then I'm starting to shake and think, hopefully I don't throw up on the auctioneer. And then there's some seriously rich people in this country, as you all know. And I thought, if they want to hit me, they're going to hit me. And so I thought, well, the only way is to try and bluff it. And so when the bids came in and it hit about 3, I thought, all right, whack a mill on it immediately. Don't muck around with hundreds. And then somebody went, oh, it's 4 something. All right, we'll make it 5. And then they probably thought, he's a maniac. He's just going to keep going. And I would have, you know, 10, 20, 30, whatever. I wanted it because of what I can do with it. $30 million is not going to pay, you know, give a hot dog to anybody in the music industry for, you know, we need a major change for the rest of the, you know, the world and the industry ongoing.
Well,
but this is cheap for that, man.
was funny as I was thinking back on Paul Newman's Daytona Rolex. The first bid was $10 million, and somebody thought they were going to blow everyone out of the water, just freak everyone out and go, $10 million. And everyone stopped and gathered themselves, and then it went up to $18 million bucks.
See, this is the thing. I met a couple of people drove down from their places and said, I want to meet this guy. And they got real money. And I just freaked them out. And they said, I want to meet the guy who made me a bridesmaid, because that never happens. And I said, oh, well, then. It was good. It's very, very good.
So the guitar, and the guitar's going to tour around the country.
Yeah, it's gonna go worldwide. Yeah, and right. I'm gonna also have little sort of acoustic gigs, things. It's gonna be played. You know, this is like Stradivarius. You don't leave them in a box. And then there's other things that's going to go with it, and with it we'll be lobbying. You know, here in the States, UK, Germany. You know, this will be in Berlin, Paris, all for Oz, everywhere. And it's actually, I've just been contacted by a massive promotion company. They're doing a huge tour with orchestra, et cetera, all through Europe, Nirvana, in 2022. And they're asking if I would be wanting to be involved with that. And yeah, sure, of course.
Wow.
And then, of course, all the big names. And I'm like, you know, in the UK, the States, really huge old-time artists, as we all know. They're all going, yeah, this is not some guy trying to promote himself. So they're in as well.
Well, Peter, the timing was perfect because we're just talking about living a life that wasn't fear-based. And I thought you spending $6 million bucks on that guitar was an example of it. But spending $6 million bucks on it and then raising money and then at some point getting rid of it and giving the money to the charities is even much further than I'd even anticipated. So,
and that's, you know, I know what you do. You're the same guy. So people don't know, you don't trumpet it, but there are a lot of good people in the world, and we just got to focus. And then we all love the arts. Now's the time to support the people.
Well,
do it, you know?
In my own little stupid way, when I went to Houston and did four shows in Houston as they sort of partially reopened, they said, we'll give all the money to the Houston Food Bank from the four shows. And I said, no, give one show's worth of money to the Houston Food Bank and give the other three shows, give those proceeds to the people who work at the club, the cooks,
you know,
and
brother,
the bartenders,
you know,
and the waiters.
I've seen so many times where 20, 30 million's been, in good faith, given to the charity. And then 8 months later, they still haven't worked out how to disseminate, get it out.
Right.
That's insane. These people need help today.
Yeah,
you need a maniac business like man like me. Goes, I got the money in my pocket. I don't need to ask anybody's permission. I'm going to do this. Get out of my way.
Well, Peter, thank you, and continued Godspeed. I should say.
Yeah, man, but be careful now. You're roped in.
Thanks, Peter. No, my feeling is I'll do what I can when I can do it, but. I'm going to drive that Newman race car. That's my take. But, you know, I got to tell you, there is something to having, whether it's a car or a guitar or anything else that rhymes with car, guitar, is taking it out there and letting people, like, sit in it, see it, show it, hear it, you know, just travel it around. I mean, that car's been to England and back with me driving it up the driveway up there. Goodwood.
Did I hear correctly? Is Peter Friedman part of the Warren Buffett, there's no such thing as lucky sperm club? Is that what he said?
Well, he certainly quoted that, but I don't know if he was.
I mean, I'm just saying, I know Warren Buffett sort of famously doesn't go around handing out, you know, his inheritance to his kids and grandkids and that sort of thing.
Well, most successful people know that giving people there's two things that I'm really giving a lot of thought to as I skate through this life. How destructive a victim mentality is and how destructive free shit is to everyone. It's destructive to the son of the millionaire. It's destructive to the person that's perpetually hooked on welfare or subsidized housing. Like, There's a version of it that works, but you know, there's a, there's a, I, there's a version of it of like, you know, when you when your kid turns 30, you know, if they're employed, then they'll get X amount of draw on this. Or if they turn 35 and they're married and they have kids, then they'll have a draw on that. There's no dump that works. You know, kid turns 18, boom, here's $50 million. That's an overdose. And I think there's a social version of it, of, you know, you can get this for a limited period of time if you're looking to get a job and blah, blah, blah. The part where you just go in perpetuity, that kills people, rich and poor. All right, let's take a quick break. You can visit Rode, that's RODE.com for more of that info on a good man's product. We'll come back. We'll do the news with Gina Grad right after this.
For just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from ACS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat cool stuff and booze. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut.
The evil bitch that is coronavirus may still be raging outside, but Corolla Drinks is hard at work with another month of Adam's Monthly Nut. This month includes a Beard Bro beard-shaping tool to tame that unruly corona facial hair, and a Chew face mask so you can silently protest how f***ing stupid all of this is, a 6-foot premium beer bong by beerbong.com, so you can slug back a few cold, endless rants when the world officially opens up again. And, of course, a bottle of your choice. We know times are tough, but we at Corolla Drinks are here to remind you to take a breath, have a drink, and wait for all this shit to be over. Mahalo.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gina Grad. Breaking viral. All those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gina Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Deep news with Gina Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
So some updates on Bubba Wallace, who is going to be on this show, and I imagine you'll speak to him at some point. A noose was found in his garage stall Sunday at Talladega, and now NASCAR and the Justice Department and the FBI are investigating it as a possible hate crime. Wallace, who's the only black driver in NASCAR's top circuit and an outspoken supporter of Black Lives Matter, wrote in a very lengthy tweet. Part of it said, "Today's despicable reminder of how much further we have to go." Oh, sorry. "Today's act of racism and hatred leaves me incredibly saddened and serves as a painful reminder of how much further we have to go as a society." Wallace has been outspoken, called out NASCAR to ban the Confederate flag at races. They did. And according to NASCAR, the garage area, because I thought you'd ask, well, who would get in there and how, is restricted to essential personnel, which includes race teams, NASCAR officials, security and health and safety personnel. And during the show just now, I got another little alert. We have some footage. The tweet from Fox Sports says, after a noose was found in a garage stall last night, drivers show support of Bubba Wallace. Go ahead. So he's driving, and when they pull back the camera, just a huge group of people walking around him, next to him, in front of him, behind him. Right. So this story picked up some traction.
2 hours later, they're going to put him into the wall at 205 miles an hour. But for now,
that's just business.
For now, they're united. Yeah, Willie T is going to be on Don Lemon's show, I think.
Oh, wow.
Tonight as we tape this. So Nate just told me that Willie T's going to, because, you know, all this stuff in the news, why not go old school and talk to a guy who was there in the 70s? Yeah, late 70s. Yeah.
And you know what? I had this horrible, cynical, jaded thought that I'm not proud of. And also, I know I'm not alone. What was one of the first horrible things you thought of when I said a noose was found in Bubba Wallace's garage stall? Did another celebrity come to mind?
Well, yeah.
Oh, Smollett.
Yeah. I'm like, Smollett ruined this for everybody. Now is everyone thinking, oh, or did it really, though?
Yeah, there's a couple ways to look at it. So the one way is, this is the problem when people do this kind of stuff. Now you're all forced to go, let's wait and see. Mm-hmm. You raise that eyebrow, which unfortunately, people earn, you know, themselves. There's like a small version of this where somebody tells you something and you go, eh, it doesn't seem like that person. And then there's a societal version of it. But then there's another part of me that thought, who in their right mind, with all that he's going through, Smollett becoming essentially a pariah,
right,
and every human and a camera everywhere, right, these days, who would try to pull this off? Only someone as daring as a NASCAR driver. Thank you.
Well said.
But would you guys try to pull anything off these days? I'd be scared the next day to go, you know, there was a bird with a GoPro on it. There was a bird with a GoPro up its ass. Saw that whole fucking thing you said you did, Corolla. Like, I'd just go, I'm sure there's a Ring doorbell or a GoPro on a pigeon or something. Like, I would be scared to try to pull anything off.
Yes, and to your point, a lot of very surprised young people are getting knocks at their door, it seems like, lately, when they thought they were just anonymous looters, you know, running into malls and grabbing stuff. The cameras were everywhere, and little by little, they're getting arrested. Like, me? How did you pick me out? I don't know, because your face is on 14 cameras in a mall?
Could you imagine just the simple, fundamental act of killing one's spouse and dumping their body somewhere?
I could not. On record, I could not.
I grew up as that being an option. That was a marital option, according to what I saw growing up. Every third movie was somebody had to dig a grave and dump them in the river. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, there's like that thing going out at night, putting them in the trunk of the car, Goodfellas, sure, you know, whatever. Yeah. It's an impossibility now, right? I don't know how you'd even do that. It's sad that my kids have to grow up in a society where they can't toy with the notion of killing their spouse.
Yeah. No longer an option. Getting away with it. Yeah.
Makes it crazier that all we see on Nextdoor, which is like a community app for your neighborhood, is like people posting like video from their Ring doorbell of porch pirates or people stealing stuff, and nothing ever happens.
No.
It's like, yes, we can. We have the capability to do all this, but we
nobody cares.
Choose not to.
Yeah, it's got to get up to murder before they do anything. Well, again, that's what got, I always say, unintended consequences, that guy got shot for the laptop computer because the guy wanted it back in Pasadena and told the cops he's got a gun. That creates that. Yeah, it's going to be a lot of the law. The law is going to be an interesting subject over the next few years.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've heard a lot about Aunt Jemima and characters such as that, and we got to get rid of them. And little twist in the Aunt Jemima story. Everybody seems perfectly happy to get rid of this this character, this imagery from this box. The company does, people involved in social justice do. But guess who's completely against changing this?
Terry Crews. I'm thinking of the blackest, the most ironic person that could be.
Samuel L. Jackson.
It couldn't be Conan O'Brien as raised his voice. I mean, that wouldn't work, right? It's got to be a black guy.
Is the original model?
Brian's very close. Oh. It is a black family. It's the families of both of the women who were the models for Aunt Jemima. Mm. Families are very upset. Relatives of the late Lillian Richard, she was one, and Anna Short Harrington. They were hired by Quaker to portray the character in the 20s and 30s. And they've spoken out after PepsiCo said, you know, these are based on racial stereotypes. We were getting rid of him. The great-great-grandson of Harrington had a lot to say in a recent interview. I just pulled one quote because he was fired up. And he says that the company's solution being to erase his great-grandmother's history hurts. Aunt Jemima brand originally depicted a heavyset black woman wearing the garb of a kitchen maid and a kerchief commonly worn by slaves. And then the next iteration of that was sort of softened, I guess, for a better word, a bit. And in the wake of this decision, now they're talking, you know, we've talked about Uncle Ben, we've talked about Cream of Wheat, and now Mrs. Butterworth, who I did not know had a race.
Oh, say, was she black?
I don't know. But I wonder if the family is still receiving something from that estate.
That was my first cynical thought, was like, the grandson shouldn't be that upset unless he's still getting a check. You're going to meet every year?
I mean,
for...
I don't know, but I do wonder.
I don't want to be a cynic, but I think one of the family members of the Aunt Jemima model woman put the noose up in Bubba Wallace's parking stall. That's what I think. James Woods tweeted about that. I tend to believe the man.
That's solid.
Yeah. You know what I was thinking about in our all woke, no joke world? And one that I could actually really sign off on, and in the New World Order, if we're going to tear down every statue and we're going to rename every military base and we're going to change the labeling on all the breakfast, all the breakfast stuff.
Flavortown, Ohio.
And one of those one of those things I was thinking about, right, versus Columbus, right? And in that world. The one I was looking at that no one's really brought up, it doesn't land under Black Lives Matter, and it's not a Me Too thing, but think about our relationships with animals and, you know, how we treat animals and factory farming, and or anyone who's ever videotaped, like, yanking, like, the Karen who was yanking her dog around in the park, right, saying there's an African-American man. You know, we were more upset about what she was doing to the dog than the African-American man. I was watching SportsCenter last night. They were doing the whatever Preakness or whatever Derby. The guy's going down the back straight. He's got the riding crop out, and he's viciously beating the shit out of the horse. Like, he's got a weapon, the crop, and he's just whacking away, like, as hard as he can on the animal he's riding. And I thought, how come that's kosher? Like, why did we, how come that slid under everyone's radar? There's a midget who's physically assaulting the horse he's on. And I mean, they're beating the shit out of that horse.
Yeah. I can only say I just listened to a recent podcast by Andrew Jenks, and I can't remember what the name of it is, but he's a very interesting guy. And he did a whole thing on all the horses dying at Santa Anita.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, I mean, yes, mainstream, you're right. It does not come up very often.
They were cropped to death.
Right.
Yes. PETA vehemently against horse racing. And a lot of, you know, like, I can't have this conversation with Tim Conway Jr. because he put me through a wall, but verbally. But I'm not a fan. It's hard to watch. I think a lot of people don't love watching it. But the series was interesting, and they talked about, you know, how the soil was packed too tight. So you try running on concrete and see what it does to your ankles and that sort of thing. So I know it's coming out there now, especially because of what happened at Santa Anita. But you're right. It's not talked about regularly amongst people who are often outraged by animal abuse.
It's sort of I was used to it sort of in the past, but as I watch it now, it's off-putting to see him just really laying into this, beating the side of the horse with this something that's meant to hurt. It's meant to get their attention. Yeah. All right, what else we got, Gina Grant?
Well, speaking of riding crops, New York City's hottest sex parties have had to modify some things during COVID-19. So there's this club called NSFW, which we all know is not safe for work. They're called New Society for Wellness, and they're a members-only sex club in New York. They recently hosted their first sextival since the pandemic began, and some of the guidelines are a little bit different. You'd think it's no holds barred, but, you know, you don't want to come home with something else you didn't walk in with.
No holds barred.
That's good.
That was funny.
So NSFW implemented a new set of guidelines for the gathering, including requirements. You got to wear masks, you got to wear gloves, and you have to bring a clean change of clothes. And you can only have you can't have new sex. You can only have sex with the person that you came with. No pun intended. Instead, guests are encouraged to enjoy themselves, quote unquote, in front of other guests or watch others who spouses have sex. At the first sextival held last weekend, footage from remote offsite adult performances also broadcast across monitors because you're just not able to get in there like you used to be.
You know, I don't normally heap praise on, like, real sex, but the show, because I'm normally angry at that show, but they have taught me some valuable lessons, because I grew up, if there was an orgy, it was 22-year-old hotties as far as the eye could see. Like, you watch a movie like Caligula back in the day, Roddy McDowell, I think, you know, they have their, like, orgy scenes. It was beautiful maidens everywhere, just sucking off everybody. But if you watch Real Sex, you'll find out the actual version of this. Those chicks look like whoever's in the crowd at a tractor pull. And you want no part of that. You want no part of that.
Malcolm McDowell.
Malcolm, what did I say? Roddy?
Roddy. Yeah. He was Planet of the Apes. Yeah. Or he was, Apes.
As you know, I famously went to a orgy in Riverside. And that is nothing, no truer words were ever spoken than by what you just said about what's really out there. And I didn't participate because who would when you're in an airplane hangar in the Inland Empire?
Yeah, but I would also argue, I don't know, why show up if you're not, you know, down
my
with
first
the cause.
Orgy.
Your first. How did that one go again? They had mattresses everywhere. There was body paint going on.
Yes. Yes. I was invited by people who worked for some facet of Playboy something because I was friends with, you know, an eclectic group of people. And you can only get in. A guy can only get in with a girl. Uh-huh. So a lot of like, you know, pseudo journalists and, you know, entertainers or whatever, a couple of us were invited. So we drive, you know, 2 hours out in the middle of nowhere and go to this giant, just huge warehouse. And the front room is like, it's literally like a bar mitzvah. There's a buffet set up. There's a band. But then there's like elderly and slightly older than middle-aged women in like fishnet body stocking, like neon green. Dudes with dress shirts and no underwear or pants and shoes.
See, this is what I've been worried about. Yeah.
Mustachioed.
Where was the business part of this?
The business. Okay. So this is how you know women have come a long way, baby. You were only allowed to go into those rooms if you were escorted by a woman. So you couldn't just be like a creep, you know, going in and being like, hey, what's shaking over here? So I would go into every room. And upstairs in the loft, it was just a sea of mattresses and people getting down. And so I'm up there in like a little sundress. And I'm just like watching everyone. And the couples are waving at me and I'm waving back. But wave means like, come on by.
When they're having
sex. So I didn't know that.
Sex.
Yeah, everyone is. And so then I went into like the dungeon rooms and like the swing rooms and the body paint rooms. And I let them body paint because there's nothing else for me to do. Mm-hmm. And but yeah, all the dudes apparently, I don't know if it was a rule, but all the dudes had dress shirts on. They just didn't have any underwear on.
Did they airbrush you?
Yeah.
Was it a like, dude doing it or a chick doing
it? Dude.
Ah, full rack, full open rack?
No, like I was in a strapless sundress. So from like, maybe a centimeter below the strap to.
Yeah.
Not really. Had so much paint.
Not really.
Yeah, come on. I think you've made the Earl Shive joke before.
I was thinking more of the Wagner, you know, power painters that they sell at Home Depot, like when you have to do a lot of fencing.
I think I have pictures from it. I'll send them when I'm
done. Like an outfield fence.
Yeah. But, send some to Larry Miller.
Oh, that's right. But it didn't feel dirty like, ooh, naughty dirty. It felt actually dirty.
Yeah, I get you.
There were people we went with who are gorgeous, who are in the porn industry, who are paid to be like party starters, and they wouldn't do anything with anybody. Mm. Just to further your point.
Yeah, you had me at orgy, but you lost me at Riverside.
Yeah. I love that song.
That is not good orgy country.
No. How about the band? Good news, guys. Got us a gig.
That's right.
Yeah.
I was picturing as you were going upstairs, you were talking about like the business was taking place upstairs. I was picturing the elevator from The Shining, but instead of blood.
Yeah, sure.
God, I'm going to make a gross joke, but when I was over at Dennis Quaid's like street block party, whatever, we started talking about giving blood and what blood type everyone was. And I don't know my blood type. Does everyone know their blood type?
No, I always said they should put on your license, but
I didn't know that. And then we were standing around kind of shooting the shit. And I said something like, I used to give blood or something. And Dennis made a joke like, oh, I thought you gave sperm or something like that. And then I said, no, different cups. we don't want to make Thousand Island or some gross version of that. And well done. Thank you. It was funny because I was a little buzzed. I think things are funnier when you're that way. Sorry. What else? One more.
You got it. Okay. Do you guys know what durian is?
Mm-mm.
I've tasted it. So this is.
Oh, is that weird fruit that smells?
Yes. This does not surprise me at all. 12 German postal workers received medical treatment and dozens more were evacuated due to this pungent, suspicious package, which turned out to be a shipment of this notoriously disgustingly smelly fruit, durian. So
CNN
reports.
German postal worker sounds like a metaphor for this guy's prompter. This guy's moron. His on-time record is better than a German postal worker. Like, it just sounds like a metaphor for something, right?
Comparison.
Model of efficiency.
Right, yes.
So CNN reports that police, firefighters, emergency services all called to this post office in this little Bavarian town when they noticed this horrible smell coming out of this package. Everyone was evacuated, 60 employees. It turned out to be this package of durian. It's this spiky fruit. It's very creamy when you taste it, and it's popular in Southeast Asia, but the smell is so bad, it has been banned all over Singapore. You can't take it in subways. It can't be in hotel rooms. The article says it smells like rotten food or dirty socks. I described it as rotten onions mixed with cat pee. I can't tell you how disgusting it smells, but it doesn't taste that bad. So it ended up being 6 ambulances, 5 first responders, 2 emergency vehicles. It turns out this guy was just sending his buddy a package of durian that he so enjoys, but it cleared out a 60-person post office.
Not good with bubble wrap, by the way, if you look at the actual fruit. Do you guys, here's how I am with the smell, which is when you smell, you know, hobo crap or somebody yaks in your car and then you want to throw up and blah, 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 then it's horrible. But when you find out that the origin is not bad, it takes the edge off it immediately. Yeah. So it's like we've all had, it's like it's a kind of a two-way street. I've always remember if you've been in enough locker rooms, once in a while you'll get a whiff of something and it smells like somebody ordered a Hawaiian pizza in here or something, and it's some dude's ass and sack who's next to you. But sometimes there's a smell where it can simulate something that's actually good or bad, but it's the origin that matters more for me. So if it's putrid smelling, that's bad. If it's a fruit that tastes good, I'm not freaked out. But if it's putrid because some rotting corpse is in the subway car, then now I don't know how you explain that. But the point is for me, it's about the origins.
How many times, or is it just me? But it can't be. You have to play the game in a new space, chopped onions or body odor, because those are very different. One's great. One's not so great.
Yeah, there are many things that if you didn't have a context for them would be good or bad. All right, let's do one more, Gina Grad.
You got it. This is a decent one for Ace on the Roof, as your dad would say. A new survey says that a majority of respondents known as home improvement projects are, of course, on the uptick during all this lockdown stuff, and that's all fine and good. Unfortunately, Fox News reports that 7 out of 10 of the people surveyed said these projects did not turn out well. Everybody's attempting it. Everybody's ruining their homes. Mm-hmm. 1 in 10 admitted that the finished product looked much worse than it did when they first started. So the average home improvement attempt reportedly has an average of 3 things that go wrong. The major problem is incorrect assembly. And respondents listed a variety of home projects that they ruined: kitchen countertops and cabinets, upgraded lighting, switches and outlets, and bathroom fixtures.
Kitchen countertops is pretty advanced, though, isn't it, Adam? Like, we've done kitchen countertops, and I wouldn't attempt to do that.
Yeah. Put in your own marble.
Well, it kind of
exactly how quartzite.
it kind of is. Kind of depends on if you're going over the existing or you're going to demo out the existing and put the new ones in. But yeah, you got to cut out for the sink and cut out for the fixtures, and there's a lot that can potentially go wrong in the kitchen countertop era.
People are so bored; they're going, you know what? I can remodel my house.
I remember once Jimmy remodeled his house, and he went with two scary things, which is a Butcher Box countertop. Sorry, not Butcher Box.
Butcher Block.
Butcher Block, like their sponsor. Yeah.
Delicious.
Yeah, Butcher Block.
Like a big wood cutting board that is large enough to be
right. The whole countertop was that, which seems cool, but an overmount sink. Never go with the overmount sink. Never go with the overmount sink. And this one had like a half inch lip as it went over the top. Now, they're much easier to mount because you just cut a rough hole and drop them in and it's clean. But all the water builds up on the outside of the sink, started delaminating all this wood, almost immediately turning black and just like spreading out. The countertop. I had a countertop that was slate once that was screwed up. Get something good, like some quartz or some synthetic whatever, and go with that undermount sink. Yes, Brian?
I was going to say, was it the fancy like farmhouse sink that has a like bib over the front? Or did he, or I'm imagining this is recent or old, did he cheap out and just get like a crappy overmount sink?
It was a crappy overmount sink, and this is probably... God, this is 20 years ago.
Okay.
Plus, but I just remember walking through the kitchen and seeing it. And then also, the other part that's tough is the seam. So the countertop is like, you know, it's like, I don't know, 14 feet a counter. So it's two pieces of the Butcher Block there, right? And so smartly, you put the seam of the 2 7-foot pieces where the sink cutout's going to go, because it's the least, you're not going to see the whole seam. You'll see 3 inches in the back and 2 inches in the front. But when the water all builds up in the back and the front, then the seam starts sucking in through the seam and delaminating it. And anyway, no one lives in that house anymore. I mean,
they had to start over.
Everyone moved on. But I do clearly remember that. And the other thing that I remember very clearly is, I go into people's houses when they're remodeling their house and I go, don't do this, otherwise that's going to happen. And I was talking to Jimmy's ex-wife at the time, and I remember saying, you got to go with a fridge that's two doors. You got to go two doors, not one big door, because if you do the one big door, when you swing it open, it's going to go right to the island and just cut the place off in half. And, I remember sort of smash cut to she went with the one big door and then threw a party. And it's like literally smash cut to me walking through the kitchen with the door open and it cutting the kitchen off in half and me like knocking on it like it was a front door. Like, excuse me, I'm going through the back. And it closes to expose her standing there. And I just went, that's what we remember. I said this part. That's what just happened. But I've had that conversation many times, and if you ever want to hear Lynette dry heave, you just repeat this mantra when I said to her many times, I should charge people $5,000 to walk through their house. And she just goes, oh, God. I'm like,
what's wrong with you?
I'm serious. I mean it, especially when it's being worked on.
It's been a while since we broached this, many years actually, but hey, Gina.
Yeah?
The fridge in your house.
Uh-oh.
Freezer on the top or freezer on the bottom?
I think you know the answer to that.
I don't.
Look.
Could be freezer on the side.
You know what? I'm just going to say this.
We
live across from John's. What do you think the answer to that question is?
John's, which used to be Vaughn's, but now became John's. All right,
this is not our stuff.
Let me. Now, what did we figure out? Freezer on the bottom was winner. Freezer on the top was loser.
That's right. Freezer on the side was, you'll get there.
Yeah.
We'll get there.
It's a nice way station to success.
Well, I will tell you, and you guys know this, but, you know, it's with all this crazy Michigas, we haven't really been, you know, talking about weddings and stuff. But what we always have been on the same page about is I'm not throwing away money on some fairy tale bullshit when we're trying to buy a house. So don't you worry. We'll have a small, tasteful micro wedding and then we'll get our house.
Oh, do we have a tweet of me making fun of Andy and Gina's stove?
Oh, yeah, that is.
I didn't know I was talking to Gina and Andy. I thought
talking
I was just,
shit about my house.
I was just making fun of a random I don't look for where the tweets are from sometimes. I just see things.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, so Andy writes Andy tweets, hey,
sorry, Andy
Tortorich, I was supposed to run the San Diego Marathon, but it was canceled. Running 26.2 miles tomorrow, my own time. Pre-marathon meal, two ribeyes and ultra salt per your instructions. I'm sure you approve. And he put a picture of ribeye in a pan on the stove. And Adam just retweets it going, looks like the meat is worth more than the stove.
Oh, sorry, Gina and Andy.
But that's okay, because many people tweeted back at you. Now you know what to get them for their wedding.
Oh, shit.
You're on the hook.
Yeah.
Now you're on the hook.
Definitely going to get you a new frying pan, that's for sure. All right, let me hit Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey. Perfect drink for your next virtual happy hour. Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey isn't your average flavored liqueur. No, it is not. It's made by husband-wife team, by the way. I think out in San Diego area, who came up with it, the American whiskey and peanut butter flavor. First off, peanut butter, it adds something to everything it touches, and why wouldn't it add it to whiskey? Also, it's fun. When we have parties, we always bust it out, and I said during our Christmas party, it was gone, man. Good conversation, fun subject. Tastes amazing all by itself, neat, or you can do it on the rocks, or you can do it in a shot form if you like. And again, elevate that cocktail hour and have some fun, man. Or put a little bit in some coffee and get some great taste. Or over a scoop of vanilla ice cream. The best. Screwball. It's also donating hand sanitizer to hospitals and police and firefighters as well. So let's support these guys. It's Screwball. Right, Dawson?
Screwball, the original and most awarded peanut butter whiskey, is now available near you. It's 70 proof. Screwball peanut butter whiskey is the perfect shot or the perfect addition to your favorite cocktail. Pick it up at a local store or get it delivered today. Get ready to hashtag get screwed. Go to screwballwhiskey.com for more info. Enjoy responsibly. Advertisement by Screwball Spirits, LLC, San Marcos, California. Whiskey in natural flavors and caramel color. 35% alcohol by volume.
John McAfee, that if you guys don't know that name... And I wasn't that familiar with John McAfee before I researched him a little bit and got into this interview. It's insane. He's living sort of off the grid out of the United States. He's a kind of like a, I don't know, he's sort of part Bond villain and part James Bond.
Yeah,
like he's kind of James Bond and a James Bond villain simultaneously. He's a genius, and he has a story to tell, and it is interesting, and lots of thoughts about this country and where it's going. So please listen to that in a second. Also, you can check out our Pluto TV channel, Chassis 585. Got all the automotive stuff there, the winning Racing Life of Paul Newman and stuff. It's got me, Adam Carolla, going racing and all. A bunch of good stuff on there, too. And, yeah, keep buying that book, y'all. It just... helps. Tempe, Arizona, the Improv, coming up July 3rd and 4th. We're doing live podcasts there, and we're doing stand-up as well. So come on out, get some tickets, and celebrate with us. Thank you, Gina and Bald and John McAfee next.